15. It takes an untouched stack of pancakes for Mama to say, "All right, Munch, what's up?" We have a table to ourselves in IHOP. It's early morning, and the restaurant's almost empty, except for us and these big-bellied, bearded truckers stuffing their faces in a booth. Thanks to them, country music plays on the jukebox. I poke my fork at my pancakes. Not real hungry. Somewhat a lie, somewhat the truth. I'm having a serious emotional hangover. There's that interview, Uncle Carlos, Haley, Khalil, Devante, my parents. Mama, Sakani, and I spent the night at Uncle Carlos's house, and I know it was more because Mama's mad at Daddy than it was about the riots. In fact, the news said last night was the first semi-peaceful night in the garden. Just protests, no riots. Cops were still throwing tear gas, though. Anyway, if I bring up my parents' fight, Mama's gonna tell me, "Stay out of grown folks' business." You'd think since it's partially my fault they fought, it is my business. But nope. "I don't know who's supposed to believe that you're not hungry," Mama says. "You've always been greedy." I roll my eyes and yawn. She got me up too early and said we were going to IHOP, just the two of us, like we used to do before Sakani came along and ruined everything. He has an extra uniform at Uncle Carlos's and can go to school with Daniel. I only had some sweats and a Drake t-shirt, not DA office appropriate. I gotta go home and change. "Thanks for bringing me here," I say. With my awful mood, I owe her that. "Anytime, baby. We haven't hung out in a while. Somebody decided I wasn't cool anymore. I thought I was still cool, so whatever." She sips from her steaming mug of coffee. "Are you scared to talk to the DA?" "Not really. Although I do notice the clock is only 3.5 hours away from our 9:30 meeting.
Is it that BS of an interview? That bastard?"
Here we go again. "Mama got his damn daddy going on TV telling lies," she says. "And who's supposed to believe a grown man was that scared of two children?" People on the internet are saying the same thing. Black Twitter's been going in on Officer Cruz's dad, claiming his name should be Tom Cruise with that performance he put on. Tumblr, too. I'm sure there are people who believe him. Haley did. But Miss Ofra was right. It backfired. Folks who never met me or Khalil are calling BS. So while the interview bothers me, it doesn't bother me that much. "It's not really the interview," I say. "It's other stuff, too." "Like?" "Khalil," I say. "Devante told me some stuff about him, and I feel guilty." "Stuff like what?" she says. "Why he sold drugs?" "He was trying to help Miss Brenda pay a debt to King." Mama's eyes widen. "What?" "Yeah. And he wasn't a King Lord. Khalil turned King down, and King's been lying to save face." Mama shakes her head. "Why am I not surprised? King would do some mess like that." I stare at my pancakes. "I should have known better. Should have known Khalil better."
"You had no way of knowing, baby," she says.
"That's the thing. If I would have been there for him, I couldn't have stopped him. Khalil was almost as stubborn as you. I know you cared about him a lot, even as more than a friend. But you can't blame yourself for this." I look up at her. "What you mean cared about him as more than a friend?" "Don't play dumb, Star. Y'all liked each other for a long time." "You think he liked me too?"
"Lord,"
Mama rolls her eyes. "Between the two of us, I'm the old one."
"You just called yourself old."
"Older one," she corrects,
and shoots me a quick stank eye. And I saw it. How in the world did you miss it?
I don't know. He always talked about other girls, not me. It's weird, though. I thought I was over my crush, but sometimes I don't know.
Mama traces the rim of her mug.
Munch, she says,
and it's followed by a sigh. Baby, look, you're grieving, okay? That can amplify your emotions and make you feel things you haven't felt in a long time. Even if you do have feelings for Khalil, there's nothing wrong with that.
Even though I'm with Chris?
Yes. You're 16. You're allowed to have feelings for more than one person.
So you're saying I can be a hoe?
Girl, she points at me, don't make me kick you under this table. I'm saying, don't beat yourself up about it. Grieve Khalil all you want. Miss him. Allow yourself to miss what could have been. Let your feelings get out of whack. But like I told you, don't stop living. All right?
All right.
Good. So that's two things, she says. What else is up?
What isn't up? My head is tight like my brain is overloaded. I'm guessing emotional hangovers feel a lot like actual hangovers.
Haley, I say. She slurps her coffee, loudly. What'd that little girl do now?
Here she goes with this. Mama, you've never liked her.
No, I've never liked how you've followed her, like you can't think for yourself. Difference.
I haven't.
Don't lie. Remember that drum set you begged me to buy? Why did you want it, Star?
Haley wanted to start a band, but I liked the idea too.
Hold up, though. Didn't you tell me you wanted to play guitar in this band? But Haley said you should play drums?
Yeah, but...
Them little Jonas boys, she says. Which one did you really like?
Joe.
But who said you should be with the curly-headed one instead?
Haley. But Nick was still fine as all get out, and this is middle school stuff.
Uh-huh. Last year, you begged me to let you color your hair purple. Why, Star?
I wanted...
No.
Why, Star? She says.
The real why.
Damn, there's a pattern here.
Because Haley wanted me, her, and Maya to have matching hair. Exactly. Baby, I love you, but you have a history of putting your wants aside and doing whatever that little girl wants. Excuse me if I don't like her. With all my receipts put out there like that, I say, I can see why. Good. Realizing is the first step. So what's she do now?
We had an argument yesterday, I say.
Really, though, things have been weird for a while. She stopped texting me and unfollowed my Tumblr. Mama reaches her fork onto my plate and breaks off a piece of pancake. What is Tumblr, anyway? Is it like Facebook? No. And you're forbidden to get one. No parents allowed. You guys already took over Facebook.
You haven't responded to my friend request yet.
I know. I need Candy Crush lives. That's why I'll never respond. She gives me the look. I don't care. There are some things I absolutely refuse to do. So, she unfollowed your Tumblr thingy, Mama says, proving why she can never have one. Is that all?
No.
She said and did some stupid stuff, too. I rub my eyes. Like I said, it's too early.
I'm starting to wonder why we're friends.
Well, Munch, she gets another freaking piece of my pancakes. You have to decide if the relationship is worth salvaging. Make a list of the good stuff, then make a list of the bad stuff. If one outweighs the other, Then you know what you gotta do. Trust me, that method hasn't failed me yet. Is that what you did with Daddy after Aisha got pregnant? I ask. 'Cause I'll be honest, I would have kicked him to the curb. No offense. It's all right. A lot of people called me a fool for going back to your daddy. Shoot, they may still call me a fool behind my back. Your Nana would have a stroke if she knew this, but she's the real reason I stayed with your daddy. I thought Nana hated Daddy. I think Nana still hates Daddy. Sadness creeps into Mama's eyes, but she gives me a small smile. When I was growing up, your grandmother would do and say hurtful things when she was drunk and apologize the next morning. At an early age, I learned that people make mistakes, and you have to decide if their mistakes are bigger than your love for them. She takes a deep breath. Seven's not a mistake. I love him to death. But Maverick made a mistake in his actions. However, all of his good and the love we share outweighs that one mistake. Even with crazy Aisha in our lives? I ask. Mama chuckles. Even with crazy, messy, annoying Aisha. It's a little different, yeah. But if the good outweighs the bad, keep Haley in your life, baby. That might be the problem. A lot of the good stuff is from the past. The Jonas Brothers, High School Musical, our shared grief. Our friendship is based on memories. What do we have now? What if the good doesn't outweigh the bad? I ask. Then let her go, Mama says. And if you keep her in your life and she keeps doing the bad, let her go. Because I promise you, had your daddy pulled some mess like that again, I'd be married to Idris Elba and saying, Maverick who? I bust out laughing. Now eat, she says, and hands me her fork, before I have no choice but to eat these pancakes for you. I'm so used to seeing smoke in Garden Heights, it's weird when we go back and there isn't any. It's dreary because of a late-night storm, but we can ride with the windows down. Even though the riot stopped, we pass as many tanks as we pass lowriders. But at home, smoke greets us at the front door. Maverick! Mama hollers, and we hurry toward the kitchen. Daddy pours water on a skillet at the sink, and the skillet responds with a loud sizzle and a white cloud. Whatever he burned it bad. Hallelujah! Seven throws his hands up at the table. Somebody who can actually cook. Shut up, Daddy says. Mama takes the skillet and examines the unidentifiable remains. What was this? Eggs?
Glad to see you know how to come home, he says.
He walks right by me without a glance or a good morning. He's still pissed about Chris? Mama gets a fork and stabs at the charred food stuck to the skillet. You want some breakfast, Seven, baby? He watches her and goes,
Nah. By the way, the skillet didn't do anything, Ma.
You're right, she says, but she keeps stabbing. Seriously, I can fix you something. Eggs, bacon. She looks toward the hall and shouts, The pork kind, pig, swine, all of that. So much for the good outweighing the bad. Seven and I look at each other. We hate when they fight because we always get stuck in the middle of their wars. Our appetites are the greatest casualty. If Mama's mad and not cooking, we have to eat Daddy's struggle meals, like spaghetti with ketchup and hot dogs in it.
I'll grab something at school.
Seven kisses her cheek.
Thanks, though.
He gives me a fist bump on his way out, the Seven way of wishing me good luck. Daddy returns wearing a backwards cap. He grabs his keys and a banana. We have to be at the DA's office at 9:30, Mama says. Are you coming?
Oh, Carlos can't do it? since he the one y'all let in on secrets and stuff.
You know what, Maverick?
I'll be there,
he says, and leaves. Mama stabs the skillet some more. The DA personally escorts us to a conference room. Her name is Karen Monroe, and she's a middle-aged white lady who claims she understands what I'm going through. Ms. Ofra is already in the conference room along with some people who work at the DA's office. Ms. Monroe gives a long speech about how much she wants justice for Khalil and apologizes that it's taken this long for us to meet.
12 days, to be exact,
Daddy points out.
Too long, if you ask me.
Ms. Monroe looks a bit uncomfortable at that. She explains the grand jury proceedings. Then she asks about that night. I pretty much tell her what I told the cops, except she doesn't ask any stupid questions about Khalil. But when I get to the part when I describe the number of shots, how they hit Khalil in his back, the look on his face, my stomach bubbles, bile pools in my mouth, and I gag. Mama jumps up and grabs a garbage bin. She puts it in front of me quick enough to catch the vomit that spews from my mouth. And I cry and puke. Cry and puke. It's all I can do. The DA gets me a soda and says, "That'll be all today, sweetie. Thank you." Daddy helps me to Mama's car, and people in the halls gawk. I bet they know I'm the witness from my teary, snotty face and are probably giving me a new name, Poor Thing. As in, oh, that poor thing. That makes it worse. I get in the car away from their pity and rest my head against the window, feeling like shit. Mama parks in front of the store and Daddy pulls up behind us. He gets out his truck and comes to Mama's side of the car. She rolls her window down. I'm going to the school, she tells him. They need to know what's going on. Can she stay with you?
Yeah, that's fine. She can rest in the office.
Another thing puking and crying gets you. People talk about you like you're not there and make plans for you. Poor thing apparently can't hear. You sure? Mama asks him. Or do I need to take her to Carlos? Daddy sighs.
Lisa.
Maverick, I don't give a flying monkey's ass what your problem is. Just be there for your daughter. Please? Daddy moves to my side of the car and opens the door.
Come here, baby.
I climb out, blubbering like a little kid who skinned her knee. Daddy pulls me into his chest, rubbing my back and kissing my hair. Mama drives off.
I'm sorry, baby,
he says. The crying, the puking don't mean anything anymore. My daddy's got me. We go in the store. Daddy turns on the lights but keeps the closed sign in the window. He goes to his office for a second, then comes back to me and holds my chin.
Open your mouth,
he says. I open it and his face scrunches up.
Ew, we gotta get you a whole bottle of mouthwash. About to raise the dead with that breath.
I laugh with tears in my eyes. Like I said, Daddy's talented that way. He wipes my face with his hands, which are rough as sandpaper, but I'm used to them. He frames my face. I smile.
There go my baby, he says. You'll be all right.
I feel normal enough to say, now I'm your baby? You haven't been acting like it.
Don't start.
He goes down the medicine aisle.
Sounding like your mama.
I'm just saying. You've been extra salty today. He returns with a bottle of Listerine.
Here, before you kill my produce with your breath.
Like you killed those eggs this morning?
Hey, those were blackened eggs. Y'all don't know about that.
Nobody knows about that. A couple of rinses in the restroom transform my mouth from a swamp of puke residue to normal. Daddy waits on the wooden bench at the front of the store. Our older customers who can't walk much usually sit there as Daddy, Seven, or I get their groceries for them. Daddy pats the spot next to him. I sit. You're gonna open back up soon?
In a little bit. What you see in that white boy?
Damn. I wasn't expecting him to go right into it. Besides the fact that he's adorable, I say, and Daddy makes a gagging sound, he's smart, funny, and he cares about me a lot.
You got a problem with black boys?
No. I've had black boyfriends. Three of them. One in fourth grade, although that doesn't really count, and two in middle school, which don't count either, because nobody knows shit about a relationship in middle school, or about anything, really.
What?
He says.
I ain't know about them.
Because I knew you'd act crazy, put a hit on them or something.
You know, that ain't a bad idea.
Daddy! I smack his arm as he cracks up.
Did Carlos know about them?
He asks. No. He would have ran background checks on them or arrested them. Not cool.
So why you tell him about the white boy?
I didn't tell him, I say. He found out. Chris lives down the street from him, so it was harder to hide. And let's be real here, Daddy. I've heard the stuff you've said about interracial couples. I didn't want you talking about me and Chris like that.
Chris, he mocks. What kind of plain-ass name is that?
He's so petty. Since you want to ask me questions, do you have a problem with white people?
Not really.
Not really?
Hey, I'm being honest. My thing is girls usually date boys who are like their daddies. And I ain't gonna lie, when I saw that white... Chris, he corrects, and I smile. I got worried. Thought I turned you against black men or didn't set a good example of a black man. I couldn't handle that.
I rest my head on his shoulder. Nah, Daddy. You haven't set a good example of what a black man should be. You've set a good example of what a man should be. Duh.
Duh,
he mocks and kisses the top of my head.
My baby.
A gray BMW comes to a sudden stop in front of the store. Daddy nudges me off the bench.
Come on.
He pulls me to his office and shoves me in. I catch a glimpse of King getting out the BMW before Daddy closes the door in my face. Hand shaking, I crack open the door. Daddy stands guard in the entrance of the store. His hand drifts to his waist, his peace. Three other King Lords hop out the BMW, but Daddy calls out,
Nah, if you want to talk, we do this alone.
King nods at his boys. They wait beside the car. Daddy steps aside and King lumbers in. I'm ashamed to admit it, but I don't know if Daddy stands a chance against King. Daddy isn't skinny or short, but compared to King, who's pure muscle at 6 feet, he looks tiny. It's damn near blasphemous to think like that, though.
Where he at?
King asks.
Where who at? You know who. Vontae. How am I supposed to know?
Daddy says.
He was working here, wasn't he? For a day or two, yeah. I ain't seen him today.
King paces and points his cigar at Daddy. Sweat glistens on the rolls of fat on the back of his head.
You lying? Why I gotta lie, King? All the shit I did for you,
King says,
and this how you repay me? Where he at, Big Mav? I don't know. Where he at?
King yells.
I said I don't know. He asked me for a couple $100 the other day. I told him he had to work for it, so he did. I had some mercy and paid it all up front like a dumbass. He was supposed to come in today and didn't. End of story. Why he need money from you when he stole 5 G's from me? Hell if I know,
Daddy says.
If I find out you lying, you ain't gotta worry about that. Got too many problems of my own. Oh, yeah. I know about your problems, King says, a laugh bubbling from him. I heard Star, the witness they been talking about on the news. Hope she know to keep her mouth shut when she's supposed to. What the hell is that supposed to mean? These cases are always interesting, King says. They dig for information, shit. They try to find out more about the person who died than the person who shot them. Make it seem like a good thing they got killed. They already saying Khalil sold drugs. That can mean problems for anybody who may have been involved in his hustle. So people gotta be careful when they talking to the DA. Wouldn't want them to be in danger because they ran their mouth. Nah, Daddy says. The folks who were involved in the hustle need to be careful about what they say or even think about doing.
There are several agonizing seconds of Daddy and King staring each other down. Daddy's hand is at his waist like it's glued there. King leaves, pushing the door hard enough to nearly break the hinges, the bell clanging wildly. He gets in his BMW. His minions follow, and he peels out, leaving the truth behind. He's gonna mess me up if I rat on him. Daddy sinks onto the old people's bench. His shoulders slump, and he takes a deep breath. We close early and pick up dinner from Reuben's. During the short drive home, I notice every car behind us, especially if it's gray.
I won't let him do anything to you, Daddy says.
I know, but still. Mama's beating the hell out of some steaks when we get home. First the skillet, and now red meat. Nothing in the kitchen is safe. Daddy holds up the bags for her to see.
I got dinner, baby.
It doesn't stop her from beating the steaks. We all sit around the kitchen table, but it's the quietest dinner in Carter family history. My parents aren't talking. Seven's not talking. I'm definitely not talking or eating. Between the disaster at the DA's office and King, my ribs and baked beans look disgusting. Sikani can't sit still, like he's itching to give every detail of his day. I guess he can tell nobody's in the mood. Bricks chomps and slobbers over some ribs in his corner. Afterward, Mama collects our plates and silverware. All right, guys, finish your homework. And don't worry, Star, your teachers gave me yours. Why would I worry about that? Thanks. She starts to pick up Daddy's plate, but he touches her arm.
Nah, I got it.
He takes all of the plates from her, dumps them in the sink, and turns the water on. Maverick, you don't have to do that. He squirts way too much dishwashing liquid in the sink. He always does.
It's cool. What time you gotta be at the clinic in the morning?
I'll be off again tomorrow. I have a job interview. Daddy turns around.
Another one?
Another one? Yeah, Markham Memorial again. That's where Aunt Pam works, I say. Yeah, her dad is on the board and recommended me. It's the pediatrics nursing manager. This is my second interview for it, actually. They want some of the higher-ups to interview me this time.
Baby, that's amazing, Daddy says. That means you're close to getting it, huh?
Hopefully, she says. Pam thinks it's as good as mine.
Why didn't you guys tell us?
Seven asks.
'Cause it's none of y'all business,
Daddy says. And we didn't want to get your hopes up, Mama adds. It's a competitive position.
How much does it pay?
Seven's rude self asks. More than what I make at the clinic. Six figures.
Six?
Seven and I say.
Mama's gonna be a millionaire,
Sikani shouts. I swear he doesn't know anything. Six figures is the 100,000, Sikani, I say.
Oh, it's still a lot.
What time is your interview?
Daddy asks. 11.
Okay, good.
He turns around and wipes a plate.
We can look at some houses before you go to it.
Mama's hand goes across her chest and she steps back.
What?
He looks at me, then at her.
I'm getting us out of Garden Heights, baby. You got my word.
The idea is as crazy as a 4-point shot. Living somewhere other than Garden Heights? Yeah, right. I'd never believe it if it wasn't Daddy saying it. Daddy never says something unless he means it. King's threat must have really got to him. He scrubs the skillet that Mama stabbed this morning. She takes it from him, sets it down, and grabs his hand. Don't worry about that.
I told you it's cool. I can get the dishes.
Forget the dishes. And she pulls him to their bedroom and closes the door. Suddenly, their TV blares real loud, and Jodeci sings over it from the stereo. If that woman ends up with a fetus in her uterus, I will be completely done. Done.
Ew, man, Seven says, knowing the deal, too. You're too old for that.
Too old for what?
Sakani asks. Nothing, Seven and I say together. You think Daddy meant that, though? I ask Seven. We're moving? He twists one of his dreads at the root. I don't think he realizes he's doing it.
Sounds like y'all are, especially if Ma gets this job.
Y'all, I say, you're not staying in Garden Heights.
I mean, I'll visit, but I can't leave my mama and my sister, Star. You know that.
Your mama put you out,
Sakani says.
Where else you gonna go, stupid?
Who you calling stupid?
Seven sticks his hand under his armpit, then rubs it in Sakani's face. The one time he did it to me, I was 9. He got a busted lip, and I got a whooping. You're not gonna be at your mama's house anyway, I say. You're going away to college, hallelujah, thank Black Jesus. Seven raises his brows.
You want an armpit hand too? And I'm going to Central Community so I can stay at my mama's house and watch out for my sisters.
That stings a little. I'm his sister too. Not just them. House, I repeat. You never call it home.
Yeah, I do, he says.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
Shut the hell up. I end that argument. Ooh, Sakani holds his hand out. Give me my dollar. Hell no, I say. That shit doesn't work with me.
$3.
Okay, fine. I'll give you a $3 bill. I've never seen a $3 bill, he says.
Exactly.
And you'll never see my $3. Part 2. 5 weeks after it. 16. Ms. Ofra arranged for me to do an interview with one of the national news programs today. Exactly a week before I testify before the grand jury next Monday. It's around 6 o'clock when the limo that the news program sent arrives. My family's coming with me. I doubt my brothers will be interviewed, but Seven wants to support me. Sakani claims he does too, but really he's hoping he'll get discovered somehow with all those cameras around. My parents told him about everything. As much as he gets on my nerves, it was sweet when he gave me a handmade card that said, sorry. Until I opened it. There was a drawing of me crying over Khalil. And I had devil horns. Sakani said he wanted it to be real. Little asshole. We all head out to the limo. Some neighbors watch curiously from their porches and yards. Mama made all of us, including Daddy, dress up like we're going to Christ Temple. Not quite Easter formal, but not diverse church casual. She says we're not going to have the news people thinking we're hood rats. So as we're walking to the car, she's all, when we get there, don't touch anything and only speak when somebody speaks to you. It's yes, ma'am, and yes, sir, or no, ma'am, and no, sir. Do I make myself clear? Yes, ma'am, the three of us say. All right now, Star, one of our neighbors calls out.
I get that just about every day in the neighborhood now. Word spreading around the garden that I'm the witness. All right now is more than a greeting. It's a simple way people let me know they got my back. The best part, though, it's never all right now Big Mav's daughter who works in the store. It's always Star. We leave in the limo. I drum my fingers on my knee as I watch the neighborhood pass by. I've talked to detectives and the DA, and next week I'll talk to the grand jury. I've talked about that night so much I can repeat it back in my sleep. But the whole world will see this. My phone vibrates in my blazer pocket. A couple of texts from Chris.
My mom wants to know what color your prom dress is. Something about the tailor needs to know ASAP.
Oh, shit. The junior-senior prom is Saturday. I haven't bought a dress. With all this Khalil stuff, I'm not sure I want to go. Mama said I need to get my mind off things. I said no. She gave me the look. So I'm going to the damn prom. This dictatorship she's on? Not cool. I text Chris back. Light blue? He responds.
You don't have a dress yet?
I've got plenty of time, I write back. Just been busy. It's true. Ms. Ofra prepared me for this interview every day after school. Some days we finished early and I helped out around Just Us for Justice. Answered phones, passed out flyers, anything they needed me to do. Sometimes I listened in on their staff meetings as they discussed police reform ideas and the importance of telling the community to protest, not riot. I asked Dr. Davis if Just Us could have a roundtable discussion at Williamson like they do at Garden High. He said he didn't see the need. Chris replies to my prom text.
Okay, if you say so. BTW, Vontae says sup. About to kill him on Madden. He needs to stop calling me Bieber, though.
After all that white boy trying to be black shit, Devontae said about Chris, lately he's at Chris's house more than I am. Chris invited him over to play Madden, and all of a sudden they're bros. According to Devontae, Chris's massive video game collection makes up for his whiteness. I told Devontae he's a video game thought. He told me to shut up. We're cool like that, though. We arrive at a fancy hotel downtown. A white guy in a hoodie waits under the awning leading up to the door. He has a clipboard under his arm and a Starbucks cup in his hand. Still, he somehow manages to open the limo door and shake our hands when we get out.
John, the producer, it's a pleasure to meet you.
He shakes my hand a second time.
And let me guess, you're a star.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much for having the bravery to do this.
There's that word again, bravery. Brave people's legs don't shake. Brave people don't feel like puking. Brave people sure don't have to remind themselves how to breathe if they think about that night too hard. If bravery is a medical condition, everybody's misdiagnosed me. John leads us through all of these twists and turns, and I'm so glad I'm wearing flats. He can't stop talking about how important the interview is and how much they want to get the truth out there. He's not exactly adding to my bravery. He takes us to the hotel courtyard, where some camera operators and other show people are setting up. In the middle of the chaos, the interviewer, Diane Carey, is getting her makeup done. It's weird seeing her in the flesh and not as a bunch of pixels on TV. When I was younger, every single time I spent the night at Nana's house, she made me sleep in one of her long-ass nightgowns, say my bedtime prayers for at least 5 minutes, and watch Diane Carey's news report so I could be knowledgeable of the world. Hi! Mrs. Carey's face lights up when she sees us. She comes over. And I gotta give the makeup lady props because she follows her and keeps working like a pro. Mrs. Carey shakes our hands. Diane, so nice to meet you all. And you must be Star, she says to me. Don't be nervous. This will simply be a conversation between the two of us. The whole time she talks, some guy snaps photos of us.
Yeah, this will be a normal conversation.
Star, we're thinking we could get shots of you and Diane walking and talking around the courtyard, John says. Then we'll go up to the suite and do the conversations between you and Diane. You, Diane, and Ms. Ofra, and finally, you and your parents. After that, we'll be all set.
One of the production people mics me up as John gives me a rundown of this walk-and-talk thing.
It's only a transitional shot, he says. Simple stuff.
Simple my ass. The first time, I practically power walk. The second time, I walk like I'm in a funeral processional and can't answer Mrs. Carey's questions. I never realized walking and talking required so much coordination. Once we get that right, we take an elevator to the top floor. John leads us to a huge suite. Seriously, it looks like a penthouse overlooking downtown. About a dozen people are setting up cameras and lighting. Ms. Ofra's there in one of her Khalil shirts and a skirt. John says they're ready for me. I sit in the love seat across from Mrs. Carey. I've never been able to cross my legs, for whatever reason. So that's out the question. They check my mic, and Mrs. Carey tells me to relax. Soon, the cameras are rolling.
Millions of people around the world have heard the name Khalil Harris, she says, and they've developed their own ideas of who he was. Who was he to you?
More than he may have ever realized. One of my best friends, I say. We knew each other since we were babies. If he were here, he'd point out that he was 5 months, 2 weeks, and 3 days older than me. We both chuckle at that. But that's who Khalil is. Was. Damn. It hurts to correct myself. He was a jokester. Even when things were hard, he'd somehow find some light in it. And he... My voice cracks. I know it's corny, but I think he's here. His nosy ass would show up to make sure I say the right things, probably calling me his number one fan or some annoying title that only Khalil can think of. I miss that boy. He had a big heart, I say. I know that some people call him a thug, but if you knew him, you'd know that wasn't the case at all. I'm not saying he was an angel or anything, but he wasn't a bad person. He was a... I shrug. He was a kid. She nods.
He was a kid.
He was a kid.
What do you think about people who focus on the not-so-good aspect of him?
She asks.
The fact that he may have sold drugs.
Ms. Ofra once said that this is how I fight, with my voice. So I fight. I hate it, I say. If people knew why he sold drugs, they wouldn't talk about him that way.
Mrs. Carey sits up a little. Why did he sell them?
I glance at Ms. Ofra and she shakes her head. During all our prep meetings, she advised me not to go into details about Khalil selling drugs. She said the public doesn't have to know about that. But then I look at the camera, suddenly aware that millions of people will watch this in a few days. King may be one of them. Although his threat is loud in my head, it's not nearly as loud as what Kenya said that day in the store. Khalil would defend me. I should defend him. So I gear up to throw a punch. Khalil's mom is a drug addict, I tell Mrs. Carey. Anybody who knew him knew how much that bothered him and how much he hated drugs. He only sold them to help her out of a situation with the biggest drug dealer and gang leader in the neighborhood. Miss Ofra noticeably sighs. My parents have wide eyes. It's dry snitching, but it's snitching. Anybody who knows anything about Garden Heights will know exactly who I'm talking about. Hell, if they watch Mr. Lewis's interview, they can figure it out. But hey, since King wants to go around the neighborhood lying and saying Khalil repped his set, I can let the world know Khalil was forced to sell drugs for him. His mom's life was in danger, I say. That's the only reason he'd ever do something like that.
and he wasn't a gang member.
He wasn't?
No, ma'am. He never wanted to fall into that type of life. But I guess I think about Devante for some reason. I don't understand how everyone can make it seem like it's okay he got killed if he was a drug dealer and a gangbanger.
A hook straight to the jaw.
The media? She asks.
Yes, ma'am. It seems like they always talk about what he may have said, what he may have done, what he may not have done. I didn't know a dead person could be charged in his own murder, you know?
The moment I say it, I know it's my jab to the mouth. Mrs. Carey asks for my account of that night. I can't go into a lot of details. Ms. Ofer told me not to. But I tell her we did everything 115 asked and never once cussed at him like his father claims. I tell her how afraid I was, how Khalil was so concerned about me that he opened the door and asked if I was okay.
So, he didn't make a threat on Officer Cruz's life? She questions.
No, ma'am. His exact words were, "Star, are you okay?" That was the last thing he said.
And I'm ugly crying, describing the moment when the shots rang out and Khalil looked at me for the last time. How I held him in the street and saw his eyes gloss over. I tell her 115 pointed his gun at me.
He pointed his gun at you? She asks.
Yes, ma'am. He kept it on me until the other officers arrived.
Behind the cameras, Mama puts her hand over her mouth. Fury sparks in Daddy's eyes. Ms. Ofra looks stunned. It's another jab.
See, I only told Uncle Carlos that part.
Mrs. Carey gives me Kleenex and a moment to get myself together.
Has this situation made you fearful of cops? She eventually asks.
I don't know, I say truthfully. My uncle's a cop. I know not all cops are bad. And they risk their lives, you know. I'm always scared for my uncle. But I'm tired of them assuming, especially when it comes to black people.
You wish that more cops wouldn't make assumptions about black people, she clarifies.
Right. This all happened because he,
I can't say his name,
assumed that we were up to no good. Because we're black, and because of where we live. We were just two kids minding our business, you know? His assumption killed Khalil. It could have killed me.
A kick straight to the ribs.
If Officer Cruz were sitting here, Mrs. Carey says, what would you say to him?
I blink several times. My mouth waters, but I swallow. No way I'm gonna let myself cry or throw up from thinking about that man. If he were sitting here, I don't have enough black Jesus in me to tell him I forgive him. Instead, I'd probably punch him straight up. But Ms. Ofer says this interview is the way I fight. When you fight, you put yourself out there, not caring who you hurt or if you'll get hurt. So I throw one more blow right at 115.
I'd ask him if he wished he shot me too.
17. My interview aired yesterday on Diane Carey's Friday Night News special. This morning, John, the producer, called and said it's one of the most watched interviews in the network's history. A millionaire who wishes to remain anonymous offered to pay my college tuition. John said the offer was made right after the interview aired. I think it's Oprah, but that's just me because I've always imagined she's my fairy godmother, and one day she'll come to my house saying, "You get a car!" The network's already got a bunch of emails in support of me. I haven't seen any of them, but I received the best message in a text from Kenya. "About time you spoke out. Don't let this fame go to your head, though."
The interview trended online. When I looked this morning, people were still talking about it. Black Twitter and Tumblr have my back. Some assholes want me dead. King's not too happy, either. Kenya told me he's heated that I dry-snitched. The Saturday news programs discussed the interview, too, dissecting my words like I'm the president or something. This one network is outraged by my disregard for cops. I'm not sure how they got that out the interview. It's not like I was on some NWA fuck the police type shit. I simply said I'd ask the man if he wished he shot me too. I don't care. I'm not apologizing for how I feel. People can say what they want. But it's Saturday, and I'm sitting in a Rolls Royce on my way to prom with a boyfriend who isn't saying much of anything to me. Chris is more interested in his phone. You look nice, I tell him, which he does. His black tux with a light blue vest and tie match the strapless tea-length gown I have on. His black leather Chuck Taylors are also a good match to my silver sequined ones. The dictator, aka my mom, bought my outfit. She has pretty good taste. Chris says, thanks, you too. But it's so robotic, like he's saying what he's supposed to and not what he wants to. And how does he know what I look like? He's barely looked at me since he picked me up from Uncle Carlos's house. I have no clue what's wrong with him. Things have been fine between us as far as I know. Now, out of nowhere, he's all moody and silent. I would ask the driver to take me back to Uncle Carlos's, but I look too cute to go home. The driveway at the country club is lit with blue lights, and golden balloon arches hang over it. We're in the only Rolls Royce among a sea of limos, so of course people look when we pull up to the entrance. The driver opens the door for us. Mr. Silent climbs out first and actually helps me out. Our classmates whoop and cheer and whistle. Chris wraps his arm around my waist and we smile for pictures like everything's all good. Chris takes my hand and wordlessly escorts me inside. Loud music greets us. Chandeliers and flashing party lights light up the ballroom. Some committee decided the theme should be Midnight in Paris, so there's a huge Eiffel Tower made out of Christmas lights. Looks like just about every junior and senior at Williamson is on the dance floor. Let me say it. A Garden Heights party and a Williamson party are two very different things. At Big D's party, people nay-nayed, hit the quan, twerked and stuff. At prom, I honestly don't know what the hell some of them are doing. Lots of jumping and fist pumping and attempts at twerking. It's not bad, just different. Way different. It's weird, though. I'm not as hesitant to dance here as I was at Big D's party. Like I said, at Williamson, I'm cool by default because I'm black. I can go out there and do a silly dance move I made up, and everyone will think it's the new thing. White people assume all black people are experts on trends and shit. There's no way in hell I'd try that at a Garden Heights party, though. You make a fool of yourself one time, and that's it. Everybody in the neighborhood will know, and nobody will forget. In Garden Heights, I learn how to be dope by watching. At Williamson, I put my learned dopeness on display. I'm not even that dope, but these white kids think I am, and that goes a long way in high school politics. I start to ask Chris if he wants to dance, but he lets my hand go and heads toward some of his boys. Why did I come to prom again? Star! Somebody calls. I look around a couple of times and finally spot Maya waving at me from a table. Girl Lee, she says when I get there. You look good. I know Chris went crazy when he saw you. No, he nearly drove me crazy. Thanks, I say, and give her a once-over. She's wearing a pink knee-length strapless dress. A pair of sparkly silver stilettos gives her about 5 more inches of height. I applaud her for making it this far in them. I hate heels. But if anybody's looking good tonight, it's you. You clean up nice, shorty. Don't call me that, especially since she who must not be named gave me that nickname.
Damn, she Voldemorted Haley. Maya, you don't have to take sides, you know.
She's the one not speaking to us, remember?
Haley's been on some silent treatment shit since the incident at Maya's house. I mean, damn. I call you out on something, so I'm wrong and deserve the cold shoulder? Nah, she's not guilt-tripping me like that. And when Maya admitted to Haley that she told me why Haley unfollowed my Tumblr, Haley stopped speaking to Maya, claiming she won't talk to either of us until we apologize. She's not used to both of us turning on her like this. Whatever. She and Chris can form a club for all I care. Call it the Silent Treatment League of Young Rich Brats. I'm in my feelings just a tad. I hate that Maya got pulled into it, though. Maya, I'm sorry.
No need, she says. Don't know if I told you, but I brought up the cat thing to her after I told her about Tumblr.
Really?
Yeah, and she told me to get over it.
Maya shakes her head.
I'm still mad at myself for letting her say it in the first place.
Yeah, I'm mad at myself, too. We get quiet. Maya nudges my side.
Hey, we minorities have to stick together, remember?
I chuckle. Okay. Where's Ryan?
Getting some snacks. He looks good tonight, if I say so myself. Where's your guy?
Don't know, I say, and don't care at the moment. The beautiful thing about best friends, they can tell when you don't want to talk, and they don't push it. Maya hooks her arm through mine.
Come on, I did not get dressed up to stand around.
We head for the dance floor and jump and fist pump along with the rest of them. Maya takes those heels off and barefoots it. Jess, Britt, and some of the other girls from the team join us, and we make our own little dancing circle. We lose our minds when my cousin through marriage, Beyonce, comes on. I swear I'm related to Jay-Z somehow. Same last name. We have to be. We sing loudly with Cousin Bae until we almost go hoarse, and Maya and I are really into it. I may not have Khalil, Natasha, or even Haley, but I have Maya. She's enough. After 6 songs, we head back to our table, our arms draped around each other. I carry one of Maya's shoes, and the other one dangles from her wrist by the strap.
Did you see Mr. Warren do the robot?
Maya asks between laughs.
Did I? I didn't know he had it in him.
Maya stops. She looks around without looking at anything at all.
Don't look, but look to the left, she mutters.
The hell? Which one is it?
Look to the left, she says through her teeth, but quickly.
Haley and Luke are arm in arm in the entrance, posing for pictures, and I can't even throw shade. With her gold and white dress and his white tux, they're cute. I mean, just because we've got beef doesn't mean I can't compliment her, you know? I'm even happy she's with Luke. It took long enough. Haley and Luke walk in our direction, but brush right past us, her shoulder a couple of inches away from mine. She flashes a stank eye. This chick. I probably shoot one back. Sometimes I give stank eyes and don't realize I'm giving them.
Yeah, that's right, Maya says to Haley's back. You better keep walking.
Lord, Maya can go from 0 to 100 a little too quick. Let's get something to drink, I say, pulling her with me, before you hurt yourself. We get some punch and join Ryan at our table. He's stuffing his face with finger sandwiches and meatballs, crumbs falling onto his tux. Where y'all been? He asks.
Dancing, Maya says.
She steals one of his shrimp.
You didn't eat all day, did you?
Nope. I was about to starve to death.
He nods at me.
What's up, black girlfriend?
We joke around about the whole only two black kids in the class are supposed to date thing.
What's up, black boyfriend?
I say, and steal a shrimp too. What do you know?
Chris remembers he came with somebody and walks over to our table. He says hey to Maya and Ryan, then asks me,
"You want to take pictures or something?"
His tone is all robotic again.
On a scale of 1 to 10 on the I'm done meter, I'm at about 50.
"No, thanks," I tell him. "I'm not taking pictures with somebody who doesn't want to be here with me."
He sighs.
"Why do you have to have an attitude?"
"Me? You're the one giving me the cold shoulder."
"Damn it, Star, do you want to take a fucking picture or not?"
The done meter blows up. Kaboom! Blown to pieces. "Hell no! Go take one and shove it up your ass!"
I march off, ignoring Maya's calls for me to come back. Chris follows me. He tries to grab my arm, but I snatch away and keep walking. It's dark outside, but I easily find the Rolls Royce parked along the driveway. The chauffeur isn't around, or otherwise I would ask him to take me home. I hop in the back and lock the doors. Chris knocks on the window.
"Star, come on."
He puts his hands against the window like they're binoculars, and he's trying to look through the tint.
"Can we talk?"
"Oh, now you want to talk to me?"
"You're the one who wouldn't talk to me."
He bows his head, pressing his forehead against the glass.
"Why didn't you tell me you were the witness they've been talking about?"
He asks it softly, but it's hard as a sucker punch in the gut. He knows. I unlock the door and scoot over. Chris climbs in next to me.
"How did you find out?" I ask.
"The interview. Watched it with my parents."
"They didn't show my face, though."
"I knew your voice, Star. And then they showed the back of you as you walked with that interview lady. And I've watched you walk away enough to know what you look like from the back, and..."
I sound like a pervert, don't I?
"So you knew me by my ass?"
Yeah.
His face goes red.
"But that wasn't all. Everything made sense, like how upset you got about the protest and about Khalil. Not that that wasn't stuff to get upset about, 'cause it was, but it..."
He sighs.
"I'm sinking here, Star. I just knew it was you. And it was, wasn't it?"
I nod.
"Babe, you should have told me. Why would you keep something like that from me?"
I tilt my head. "Wow. I saw someone get murdered, and you're acting like a brat 'cause I didn't tell you?"
"I didn't mean it like that."
"But you think about that for a second," I say. "Tonight you could hardly say two words to me, because I didn't tell you about one of the worst experiences of my life. You ever seen somebody die?"
"No."
"I've seen it twice."
"And I didn't know that," he says. "I'm your boyfriend, and I didn't know any of that."
He looks at me, the same hurt in his eyes like there was when I snatched my hands away weeks ago.
"There's this whole part of your life that you've kept from me, Star. We've been together over a year now, and you've never mentioned Khalil, who you claim was your best friend, or this other person you saw die. You didn't trust me enough to tell me."
My breath catches. It's not like that."
"Really?" he says. "Then what is it like? What are we? Just Fresh Prince and fooling around?"
"No." My lips tremble, and my voice is small. I can't share that part of me here, Chris."
"Why not?"
"Because," I croak, "people use it against me. Either I'm poor Star who saw her friend get killed in a drive-by, or Star the charity case who lives in the ghetto. That's how the teachers act."
"Okay. I get not telling people around school," he says. "But I'm not them. I would never use that against you.
You once told me I'm the only person you could be yourself around at Williamson. But the truth is, you still didn't trust me.
I'm 1 second away from ugly crying. You're right, I say. I didn't trust you. I didn't want you to just see me as the girl from the ghetto.
You didn't even give me the chance to prove you wrong. I want to be there for you. You gotta let me in.
God, being two different people is so exhausting. I've taught myself to speak with two different voices and only say certain things around certain people. I've mastered it. As much as I say I don't have to choose which star I am with Chris, maybe without realizing it, I have to an extent. Part of me feels like I can't exist around people like him. I am not gonna cry. I am not gonna cry. I am not gonna cry. Please, he says. That does it. Everything starts spilling out. I was 10 when my other friend died, I say, staring at the French tips on my nails. She was 10 too.
What was her name? He asks.
Natasha. It was a drive-by. It's one of the reasons my parents put me and my brothers in Williamson. It was the closest they could get to protecting us a little more. They bust their butts for us to go to that school. Chris doesn't say anything. I don't need him to. I take a shaky breath and look around. You don't know how crazy it is that I'm even sitting in this car, I say. A Rolls freaking Royce? I used to live in the projects in a one-bedroom apartment. I shared the room with my brothers, and my parents slept on a fold-out couch. The details of life back then are suddenly fresh. The apartment smelled like cigarettes all the damn time, I say. Daddy smoked. Our neighbors above us and next to us smoked. I had so many asthma attacks, it ain't funny. We only kept canned goods in the cabinets because of the rats and roaches. Summers were always too hot and winters too cold. We had to wear coats inside and outside. Sometimes Daddy sold food stamps to buy clothes for us, I say. He couldn't get a job for the longest time because he's an ex-con. When he got hired at the grocery store, he took us to Taco Bell, and we ordered whatever we wanted. I thought it was the greatest thing in the world, almost better than the day we moved out the projects. Chris cracks a small smile.
Taco Bell is pretty awesome.
Yeah. I look at my hands again. He let Khalil come with us to Taco Bell. We were struggling, but Khalil was like our charity case. Everybody knew his mama was a crackhead. I feel the tears coming. Fuck, I'm sick of this. We were real close back then. He was my first kiss, first crush. Before he died, we weren't as close anymore. I mean, I hadn't seen him in months, and I'm ugly crying. And it's killing me because he was going through so much shit. And I wasn't there for him anymore. Chris thumbs my tears away.
You can't blame yourself.
But I do, I say. I could have stopped him from selling drugs. Then people wouldn't be calling him a thug. And I'm sorry I didn't tell you. I wanted to, but everybody who knows I was in the car acts like I'm made out of glass. You treated me normal. You were my normal.
I'm an absolute mess right now. Chris takes my hand and pulls me onto his lap, so I'm straddling him. I bury my face in his shoulder and cry like a big-ass baby. His tux is wet. My makeup is ruined. Awful.
I'm sorry, he says, rubbing my back. I was an ass tonight.
You were, but you're my ass.
I've been watching myself walk away.
I look at him and seriously punch his arm.
He laughs, and the sound of it makes me laugh. You know what I mean. You're my normal. And that's all that matters.
All that matters. He smiles.
I hold his cheek and let my lips reintroduce themselves to his. Chris's are soft and perfect. They taste like fruit punch, too. Chris pulls back with a gentle tug to my bottom lip. He presses his forehead against mine and looks at me.
I love you.
The eye has appeared. My response is easy. I love you, too. Two loud knocks against the window startled us. Seven presses his face against the glass.
Y'all bet not be doing nothing.
The best way to get turned all the way off? Have your brother show up. Seven, leave them alone. Layla whines behind him. We were about to dance, remember?
That can wait. I gotta make sure he's not getting some from my sister.
You won't get any if you don't stop acting so ridiculous, she says.
I don't care. Star, get out this car. I ain't playing.
Chris laughs into my bare shoulder.
Did your dad tell him to keep an eye on you?
Knowing Daddy, probably so. He kisses my shoulder and his lips linger there a few seconds.
Are we good now?
I peck him back on the lips. We're good.
Good. Let's go dance.
We get out the car, and Seven yells about us sneaking off and threatens to tell Daddy. Layla pulls him back inside as he says,
And if she push out a little Chris in 9 months, we gonna have a problem, partner.
Ridiculous. Re-damn-diculous. The music is still bumping inside. I try not to laugh as Chris really does turn the nay-nay into a no-no. Maya and Ryan join us on the dance floor, and they give me these, what the hell, looks at Chris's moves. I shrug and go with it. Toward the end of a song, Chris leans down to my ear and says, I'll be right back. He disappears into the crowd. I don't think anything of it until about a minute later when his voice comes over the speakers and he's next to the DJ in the booth.
Hey, everybody, he says. My girl and I had a fight earlier.
Oh, Lord, he's telling all of our business. I look at my chucks and shield my face.
And I wanted to do this song, our song, to show you how much I love you and care about you, Fresh Princess.
A bunch of girls go, aww. His boys whoop and cheer. I'm thinking, please don't let him sing. Please.
But there's this familiar boom, 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 boom. Now this is a story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down. Chris raps. And I'd like to take a minute, just sit right there. I'll tell you how I became the prince of a town called Bel Air.
I smile way too hard. Our song. I rap along with him, and mostly everyone joins in, even the teachers. At the end, I cheer louder than anybody. Chris comes back down, and we laugh and hug and kiss. Then we dance and take silly selfies, flooding dashboards and timelines around the world. When prom is over, we let Maya, Ryan, Jess, and some of our other friends ride with us to IHOP. Everybody has somebody on their lap. At IHOP, we eat way too many pancakes and dance to songs on the jukebox. I don't think about Khalil or Natasha. It's one of the best nights of my life. 18. On Sunday, my parents take me and my brothers on a trip. It seems like a normal visit to Uncle Carlos's house until we pass his neighborhood. A little over 5 minutes later, a brick sign surrounded by colorful shrubs welcomes us to Brook Falls. Single-story brick houses line freshly paved streets. Black kids, white kids, and everything in between play on the sidewalks and in yards. Open garage doors show all of the junk inside, and bikes and scooters lay abandoned in yards. Nobody's worried about their stuff getting stolen in the middle of the day. It reminds me of Uncle Carlos's neighborhood, yet it's different. For one, there's no gate around it, so they're not keeping anyone out or in, but obviously people feel safe. The houses are smaller, more homey looking, and straight up, there are more people who look like us compared to Uncle Carlos's neighborhood. Daddy pulls into the driveway of a brown brick house at the end of a cul-de-sac. Bushes and small trees decorate the yard, and a cobblestone walkway leads up to the front door.
Come on, y'all, Daddy says.
We hop out, stretching and yawning. Those 45-minute drives aren't a joke. A chubby black man waves at us from the driveway next door. We wave back and follow my parents up the walkway. Through the glass of the front door, the house appears empty.
Whose house is this?
Seven asks. Daddy unlocks the door.
Hopefully, ours.
When we go inside, we're standing in the living room. There's a strong stench of paint and polished hardwood floors. Two halls, one on each side, lead away from the living room. The kitchen is right off from the living room, with white cabinets, granite countertops, and stainless steel appliances. We wanted you guys to see it, Mama says. Look around. I can't lie, I'm afraid to move. This is our house?
Like I said, we hope so, Daddy replies. We're waiting for the mortgage to be approved. Can we afford it?
Seven asks. Mama raises an eyebrow. Yes, we can.
But like, down payments and stuff?
Seven, I hiss. He's always in somebody's business.
We got everything taken care of, Daddy says. We'll rent the house in the garden out, so that's gonna help with the monthly payments. Plus,
he looks at Mama with this sly grin that's kinda adorable, I gotta admit. I got the nurse manager job at Markham, she says, smiling. I start in 2 weeks.
For real?
I say, and Seven goes, whoa, while Sakani shouts, Mama's rich!
Boy, ain't nobody rich, Daddy says, calm down.
But this helps, says Mama, a lot.
Daddy, you're okay with us living out here with the fake people?
Sakani asks. Where you get that from, Sakani? Mama says.
Well, that's what he always says, that people out here are fake, and that Garden Heights is real.
Yeah, he does say that, says Seven.
I nod, all the time. Mama folds her arms. Care to explain, Maverick?
I don't say it that much.
Yeah, you do,
the rest of us say.
I say it a lot. I may not have been 100% right on all of this.
Mama coughs, but there's a ha hidden in it. Daddy glares at her.
But I realize being real ain't got anything to do with where you live. The realest thing I can do is protect my family. And that means leaving Garden Heights.
What else? Mama questions, like he's being grilled in front of the class.
And that living in the suburbs don't make you any less black than living in the hood.
Thank you, she says with a satisfied smile.
Now are y'all gonna look around or what?
Daddy asks. Seven hesitates to move, and since he's hesitant, Sakani is too. But shoot, I want first dibs on a room. Where are the bedrooms? Mama points to the hall on the left. I guess Seven and Sakani realize why I asked. The three of us exchange looks. We rush for the hall. Sakani gets there first. And it's not my best moment, but I sling his scrawny butt back.
Mommy, she threw me, he whines.
I beat Seven to the first room. It's bigger than my current room, but not as big as I want. Seven reaches the second one, looks around, and I guess he doesn't like it. That leaves the third room as the biggest one, and it's at the end of the hall. Seven and I race for it, and it's like Harry Potter versus Cedric Diggory trying to get to the Goblet of Fire.
I grab Seven's shirt, stretching it until I have a good enough grip to pull him back and get ahead of him. I beat him to the room and open the door. And it's smaller than the first one.
I call dibs,
Sakani shouts. He shimmies in the doorway of the first room, the biggest of the three. Seven and I rock, paper, scissor it for the second biggest room. Seven always goes with rock or paper, so I easily win. Daddy leaves to get lunch, and Mama shows us the rest of the house. My brothers and I have to share a bathroom again. Sakani's finally learned aim etiquette and the art of flushing, so it's fine, I guess. The master suite is on the other hallway. There's a laundry room, an unfinished basement, and a two-car garage. Mama says we'll get a basketball hoop on wheels. We can keep it in the garage, roll it in front of the house, and play in the cul-de-sac sometimes. A wooden fence surrounds the backyard, and there's plenty of space for Daddy's garden and bricks. Bricks can come out here, right? I ask. Of course. We aren't going to leave him. Daddy brings burgers and fries, and we eat on the kitchen floor. It's super quiet out here. Dogs bark sometimes, but wall-rattling music and gunshots? Not happening. So, we're going to close in the next few weeks or so, Mama says. But since it's the end of the school year, we'll wait until you guys are out for summer to move.
'Cause moving ain't no joke, Daddy adds.
Hopefully we can get settled in before you go off to college, Seven, Mama says. Plus, it gives you a chance to make your room yours, so you can have it for holidays and the summer. Sakani slurps his milkshake and says with a mouthful of froth, Seven said he's not going to college. Daddy says,
What?
Seven glares at Sakani.
I didn't say I wasn't going to college. I said I wasn't going away to college. I'm going to Central Community, so I can be around for Kenya and Lyric. Oh, hell no, Daddy says.
You can't be serious, says Mama. Central Community is the junior college on the edge of Garden Heights. Some people call it Garden Heights High 2.0, because so many people from Garden High go there and take the same drama and bullshit with them.
They have engineering classes, Seven argues.
But they don't have the same opportunities as those schools you applied to, Mama says. Do you realize what you're passing up? Scholarships, internships. The chance for me to finally have a Seven-free life, I add, and slurp my milkshake.
Who asked you? Seven says.
Yo mama. Low blow, I know, but that response comes naturally. Seven flicks a fry at me, I block it, and come this close to flipping him off, but Mama says, You bet not. And I lower my finger.
Look, you're not responsible for your sisters, Daddy says, but I'm responsible for you. And I ain't letting you pass up opportunities so you can do what two grown-ass people supposed to do.
A dollar, Daddy, Sakani points out.
I love that you look out for Kenya and Lyric,
Daddy tells Seven.
But there's only so much you can do. You can choose whatever college you want, and you'll be successful. But you choose because that's where you want to be, not because you're trying to do somebody else's job. You hear me?
Yeah, Seven says. Daddy hooks his arm around Seven's neck and pulls him closer. Daddy kisses his temple.
I love you, and I always got your back.
After lunch, we gather in the living room, join hands, and bow our heads.
Black Jesus. Thank you for this blessing, Daddy says. Even when we weren't so crazy about the idea of moving,
Mama clears her throat.
Okay, when I wasn't so crazy about the idea of moving,
Daddy corrects,
you worked things out. Thank you for Lisa's new job. Please help her and continue to be with her when she does extra shifts at the clinic. Help Sakani with his end of the year tests. And thank you, Lord, for helping Seven do something I didn't, get a high school diploma. Guide him as he chooses a college and let him know you're protecting Kenya and Lyric.
Now, Lord, tomorrow is a big day for my baby girl as she goes before this grand jury. Please give her peace and courage. As much as I want to ask you to work this case out a certain way, I know you already got a plan. I ask for some mercy, God. That's all. Mercy for Garden Heights, for Khalil's family, for Star. Help all of us through this. In your precious name.
Wait, Mama says. I peek out with one eye. Daddy does too. Mama never, ever interrupts prayer.
Baby, says Daddy. I was finishing up.
I have something to add. Lord, bless my mom, and thank you that she went into her retirement fund and gave us the money for the down payment. Help us turn the basement into a suite so she can stay here sometimes.
No, Lord, Daddy says.
Yes, Lord, says Mama.
No, Lord.
Yes.
No, amen.
We get home in time to catch a playoffs game. Basketball season equals war in our house. I'm a LeBron fan through and through. Miami, Cleveland, it doesn't matter, I ride with him. Daddy hasn't jumped off the Lakers ship yet, but he likes LeBron. Seven's all about the Spurs. Mama's an anybody but LeBron hater, and Sakani is a whoever is winning fan. It's Cleveland versus Chicago tonight. The battle lines are drawn. Me and Daddy versus Seven and Mama. Seven jumps on that anybody but LeBron bandwagon of hateration, too. I change into my LeBron jersey. Every time I don't wear it, his team loses. Seriously, I'm not even lying. I can't wash it either. Mama washed my last jersey right before finals, and Miami lost to the Spurs. I think she did it on purpose. I take my lucky spot in the den in front of the sectional. Seven comes in and steps over me, putting his big bare foot near my face. I smack it away. Get your crusty foot out of my face.
We'll see who's joking later. Ready for a butt whooping?
You mean am I ready to give one? Yup. Mama peeks around the doorway. Munch, you want some ice cream? I gape at her. She knows I don't eat dairy products during games. Dairy gives me gas, and gas is bad luck. She grins. How about a sundae? Sprinkles, strawberry syrup, whipped cream. I cover my ears. La 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 la. Go away, LeBron hater. La 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 la. Like I said, basketball season equals war. And my family has the dirtiest tactics. Mama returns with a big bowl, shoveling ice cream into her mouth. She sits on the sectional and lowers her bowl into my face. You sure you don't want some, Munch? It's your favorite, too. Cake batter. So good. Be strong, I tell myself. But damn, that ice cream looks good. Strawberry syrup glistens on it and a big dollop of whipped cream sits pretty on top. I close my eyes. I want a championship more. Well, you aren't getting that, so you may as well enjoy some ice cream.
Ha! Seven goes. What's all this smack up in here?
Daddy asks. He takes the recliner on the sectional, his lucky spot. Sakani scurries in and sits behind me, propping his bare feet on my shoulders. I don't mind. They haven't matured and funkified yet. I was offering Munch some of my sundae, Mama says. You want some, baby?
Heck no. You know I don't eat dairy during games.
See? It's serious.
You and Seven may as well get ready for this butt-whooping Cleveland about to give y'all, says Daddy. I mean, it ain't gonna be a Kobe butt-whooping, but it's gonna be a good one.
Amen, I say, except the Kobe part. Boy, bye, Mama tells him. You're always picking sorry teams. First, the Lakers.
Hey, a three-peat ain't a sorry team, baby. And I don't always pick sorry teams. He grins. I picked your team, didn't I?
Mama rolls her eyes, but she's grinning too. and I hate to admit it, but they're kind of cute right now.
Yeah, she says, that's the only time you picked right.
Uh-huh, Daddy says. See, your mama played for St. Mary's basketball team, and they had a game against Garden High, my school.
And we whooped their butts, too, Mama says, licking ice cream off her spoon. Them little girls ain't have anything on us, I'm just saying.
Anyway, I'm there to watch some of the homeboys play after the girls' game,
Daddy says, looking at Mama. This is so adorable, I can't stand it.
I got there early and saw the finest girl ever, and she was playing her ass off on the court.
Tell them what you did, says Mama, although we know.
Hey, I was trying to...
Nah. Tell them what you did, she says.
I tried to get your attention.
Uh-uh, Mama says, getting up. She hands me her bowl and stands in front of the TV. You were like this on the sideline, she says, and she kind of leans to the side, holding her crotch and licking her lips. We crack up. I can so see Daddy doing that, too. During the middle of a game, she says, standing there looking like a pervert, just watching me.
But you noticed me, Daddy says, right?
'Cause you looked like a fool. Then, during halftime, I'm on the bench, and he's behind me talking about, she deepens her voice,
hey, shorty, what's your name? You know you looking good out there. Can I get your number? Dang, Pops, you didn't have any game,
Seven says.
I had game, Daddy argues. Did you get a number that night, though?
Seven says.
I mean, I was working on it.
Did you get her number? I repeat Seven's question.
Nah, he admits.
And we're hollering laughing.
Man, whatever. Hate all y'all want. I eventually did something right.
Yeah, Mama admits, running her fingers through my hair. You did. By the second quarter of Cleveland versus Chicago, we're yelling and shouting at the TV. When LeBron steals the ball, I jump up and bam, he dunks it. In your face, I yell at Mama and Seven. In your face. Daddy gives me a high five and claps. That's what I'm talking about. Mama and Seven roll their eyes. I sit in my game time position, knees pulled in, right arm draped over my head and holding my left ear and my left thumb in my mouth. Don't hate. It works. Cleveland's offense and defense is on point. Let's go, Cavs! Glass shatters. Then pop, 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 pop! Gunshots. Get down, Daddy yells. I'm already down. Sikani comes down next to me. Then Mama on top of us and she wraps her arms around us. Daddy's feet thud toward the front of the house and the hinges on the front door squeak as it swings open. Tires screech off.
Motherfuck!
Gunshots cut Daddy off. My heart stops. For a split second, I visit a world without my dad, and it doesn't seem like much of a world at all. But his footsteps rush back in.
Y'all alright?
The weight on top of me lifts. Mama says she's okay, and Sakani says he is too. Seven echoes them. Daddy's holding his Glock.
I shot at them fools, he says between heavy breaths. I think I hit a tire. Ain't never seen that car before.
Did they shoot in the house? Mama asks.
Yeah, a couple shots through the front window,
he says.
They threw something, too. Landed in the living room.
I head for the front.
Star, get back here, Mama calls.
I'm too curious and too hard-headed. Glass shards glisten all over Mama's good sofa. A brick sits in the middle of the floor. Mama calls Uncle Carlos. He gets to our house in half an hour. Daddy hasn't stopped pacing the den, and he hasn't put his Glock down. Seven takes Sikani to bed. Mama has her arm around me on the sectional and won't let go. Some of our neighbors checked in, like Mrs. Pearl and Miss Jones. Mr. Charles from next door rushed over, holding his own piece. None of them saw who did it. Doesn't matter who did it, it was clearly a message for me. I have this sick feeling, like I got when I ate ice cream and played in hot weather too long when I was younger. Miss Rosalie said the heat boiled my stomach and that something cool would settle it. Nothing cool can settle this.
Did you call the police?
Uncle Carlos asks.
Hell no, says Daddy. How I know it wasn't them? Maverick, you still should have called, Uncle Carlos says. This needs to be recorded. And they can send someone to guard the house. Oh, I got somebody to guard the house. Don't worry about that. It definitely ain't gonna be no crooked pig who may have been behind this. King Lords could have done this, says Uncle Carlos. Didn't you say King made a veiled threat against Star because of her interview?
I'm not going tomorrow, I say. But I have a better chance of being heard at a Drake concert.
It ain't no damn coincidence that somebody's trying to scare us the night before she testifies to the grand jury,
Daddy says.
That's some shit your buddies would do.
You'd be surprised at how many of us want justice in this case, says Uncle Carlos. But of course, classic Maverick, every cop is automatically a bad cop.
I'm not going tomorrow, I repeat.
I ain't say every cop is a bad cop, but I ain't gonna stand here like a fool thinking that some of them don't do dirty shit. Hell, they made me lay face down on the sidewalk, and for what? 'Cause they could.
It could have been either one of them, Mama says. Trying to figure out who did it will get us nowhere. The main thing is making sure Star is safe tomorrow.
I said I'm not going,
I shout. They finally hear me. My stomach holds a roiling boil. Yeah, it could have been King Lords, but what if it was the cops? I look at Daddy and remember that moment weeks ago in front of the store. I thought they were going to kill you, I croak, because of me. He kneels in front of me and sits the Glock beside my feet. He lifts my chin.
Point one of the 10-point program. Say it.
My brothers and I learned to recite the Black Panthers 10-point program the same way other kids learned the Pledge of Allegiance. We want freedom, I say. We want the power to determine the destiny of our black and oppressed communities.
Say it again.
We want freedom. We want the power to determine the destiny of our black and oppressed communities.
Point seven.
We want an immediate end to police brutality, I say, and the murder of black people, other people of color, and oppressed people.
Again.
We want an immediate end to police brutality and the murder of black people, other people of color, and oppressed people.
And what did Brother Malcolm say is our objective?
Seven and I could recite Malcolm X quotes by the time we were 13. Sekani hasn't gotten there yet. Complete freedom, justice, and equality, I say. By any means necessary.
Again.
Complete freedom, justice, and equality. By any means necessary.
So why you gonna be quiet?
Daddy asks. Because the 10-point program didn't work for the Panthers. Huey Newton died a crackhead, and the government crushed the Panthers one by one. By any means necessary didn't keep Brother Malcolm from dying, possibly at the hands of his own people. Intentions always look better on paper than in reality. The reality is, I may not make it to the courthouse in the morning. Two loud knocks at the front door startle us. Daddy straightens up, grabs his Glock, and leaves to answer. He says what's up to somebody, and there's a sound like palm slapping. Then a male voice says,
"You know we got you, Big Mav."
Daddy returns with some tall, wide-shouldered guys dressed in gray and black. It's a lighter gray than what King and his folks wear. It takes a hood-trained eye to notice it and understand. This is a different set of King Lords.
This is Goon,
Daddy points to the shortest one, in front with the ponytails.
Him and his boy is gonna provide security for us tonight and tomorrow.
Uncle Carlos folds his arms and gives the King Lords a hard look.
You asked King Lords to guard the house when King Lords may have put us in this position? They don't mess with King, Daddy says. They Cedar Grove King Lords.
Shit. They may as well be GDs, then. Sets make all the difference in gangbanging, not colors. The Cedar Grove King Lords have been beefing with King Set, the West Side King Lords, for a while now.
You need us to fall back, Big Mav?
Goon asks.
Nah, don't worry about him, Daddy says. Y'all do what y'all came to do.
Nothing but a thing, Goon says, and gives Daddy dap.
Him and his boys head back outside.
Are you serious right now? Uncle Carlos yells. You really think gangbangers can provide adequate security?
They strapped, ain't they?
Daddy says.
Ridiculous.
Uncle Carlos looks at Mama.
Look, I'll go with you to the courthouse tomorrow, as long as they aren't coming too. Punk ass, Daddy says. Can't even protect your niece because you're scared of what it'll look like to your fellow cops if you're working with gangbangers.
Oh, you want to go there, Maverick?
Uncle Carlos says. Carlos, calm down.
No, Lisa. I want to make sure I got this right. Does he mean the same niece I took care of while he was locked up, huh? The one I took to her first day of school because he took a charge for his so-called boy? The one I held when she cried for her daddy?
He's loud, and Mama stands in front of him to keep him from Daddy.
You can call me as many names as you want, Maverick, but don't you ever say I don't care about my niece and nephews. Yeah, that's right, nephews. 7-2. When you were locked up...
Carlos, Mama says.
No, he needs to hear this. When you were locked up, I helped Lisa every time your sorry-ass baby mama dropped 7 off on her, for weeks at a time. Me! I bought clothes, food, provided shelter. My Uncle Tom ass. Hell no, I don't want to work with criminals. But don't you ever insinuate I don't care about any of those kids.
Daddy's mouth makes a line. He's silent. Uncle Carlos snatches his keys off the coffee table, gives my forehead 2 pecks, and leaves. The front door slams shut. 19. The smell of hickory bacon and the sound of way too many voices wake me up. I blink to soothe my eyes from the assault my neon blue walls are giving them. It takes me a few minutes lying here to remember it's grand jury day. Time to see if I'll fail Khalil or not. I put my feet in my slippers and head toward the unfamiliar voices. 7 and Sakani are at school by now. Plus, their voices aren't that deep. I should be worried about some unknown dudes seeing me in my pajamas. But that's the beauty of sleeping in tanks and basketball shorts. They won't see much. The kitchen's standing room only. Guys in black slacks, white shirts, and ties are at the table or standing against the wall, shoveling food in their mouths. They have tattoos on their faces and hands. A couple of them give me quick nods and mumble, "Sup," through mouths full of food. The Cedar Grove King Lords. Damn, they clean up nicely. Mama and Aunt Pam work the stove as skillets full of bacon and eggs sizzle, blue flames dancing beneath them. Nana pours juice and coffee and runs her mouth. Mama barely looks over her shoulder and says, "Morning, Munch. Your plate's in the microwave. Come get these biscuits out for me, please." She and Aunt Pam move to the ends of the stove, stirring the eggs and turning the bacon. I grab a towel and open the oven. The aroma of buttery biscuits and a heat wave hit me head on. I pick up the pan with the towel, and that thing is still too hot to hold for long.
"Over here, little mama," Goon says at the table.
I'm glad to put it down. Not even 2 minutes after I set it on the table, every last biscuit is gone. God damn. I grab my paper towel-covered plate from the microwave before the King Lords inhale it, too.
Star, get those other plates for your dad and your uncle, Aunt Pam says. Take them outside, please.
Uncle Carlos is here?
I tell Aunt Pam. Yes, ma'am. Stack their plates on top of mine, grab the hot sauce and some forks, and leave as Nana starts one of her
back in my theater days stories.
Outside, the sunlight's so bright it makes the paint on my walls seem dim. I squint and look around for Daddy or Uncle Carlos. The hatch on Daddy's Tahoe is up, and they're sitting on the back of it. My slippers scuff against the concrete, sounding like brooms sweeping the floor. Daddy looks around the truck.
There go my baby.
I hand him and Uncle Carlos a plate and get a kiss to the cheek from Daddy in return.
You sleep okay?
He asks.
Kinda.
Uncle Carlos moves his pistol from the space between them and pats the empty spot.
Keep us company for a bit.
I hop up next to them. We unwrap the plates that have enough biscuits, bacon, and eggs for a few people.
I think this one's yours, Maverick, Uncle Carlos says. It's got turkey bacon. Thanks, man,
Daddy says, and they exchange plates. I shake hot sauce on my eggs and pass Daddy the bottle. Uncle Carlos holds his hand out for it, too. Daddy smirks and passes it down.
I would have thought you were too refined for some hot sauce on your eggs. You do realize this is the house I grew up in, right?
He covers his eggs completely in hot sauce, sets the bottle down, and licks his fingers for the sauce that got on them.
Don't tell Pam I ate all of this, though. She's always on me about watching my sodium. I won't tell if you won't tell,
Daddy says. They bump fists to seal the deal. I woke up on another planet or in an alternate reality. Something.
Y'all cool all of a sudden?
We talked,
Daddy says.
It's all good.
Yep, says Uncle Carlos.
Some things are more important than others.
I want details, but I won't get them. If they're good, though, I'm good. And honestly, it's about damn time. Since you and Aunt Pam are here, where's Devante? I ask Uncle Carlos.
At home, for once, and not playing video games with your little boyfriend.
Why does Chris always have to be little to you? I ask. He's not little.
You better be talking about his height,
says Daddy.
Amen,
Uncle Carlos adds, and they fist bump again. So they've found common complaining ground. Chris. Figures. Our street is quiet for the most part this morning. It usually is. The drama always comes from people who don't live here. Two houses down, Mrs. Lynn and Miss Carol talk in Mrs. Lynn's yard. Probably gossiping. Can't tell either one of them anything if you don't want it spread around Garden Heights like a cold. Mrs. Pearl works in her flower bed across the street with a little help from 40 Ounce. Everybody calls him that, because he always asks for money to buy a 40 Ounce from the liquor store real quick. His rusty shopping cart with all of his belongings is in Mrs. Pearl's driveway, a big bag of mulch on the bottom of it. Apparently, he has a green thumb. He laughs at something Mrs. Pearl says, and people two streets over probably hear that guffaw of his.
Can't believe that fool's alive, Uncle Carlos says. Would have thought he drank himself to death by now.
Who? 40 Ounce? I ask.
Yeah, he was around when I was a kid. Nah, he ain't going nowhere,
says Daddy.
He claims the liquor keeps him alive. Does Mrs. Rooks live around the corner?
Uncle Carlos asks.
Yep, I say. And she still makes the best red velvet cakes you ever had in your life.
Wow. I told Pam I have yet to taste a red velvet cake as good as Mrs. Rooks. What about,
He snaps his fingers.
The man who fixed cars lived at the corner. Mr. Washington,
says Daddy.
Still kicking it and still does better work than any automotive shop around. Got his son helping him, too.
Little John? Uncle Carlos asks.
The one that played basketball but got on that stuff?
Yep, says Daddy. He been clean for a minute now.
Man. Uncle Carlos pushes his red eggs around his plate. I almost miss living here sometimes.
I watch 40 Ounce help Mrs. Pearl. People around here don't have much, but they help each other out as best they can. It's this strange, dysfunctional-as-hell family, but it's still a family, more than I realized until recently.
Star?
Nana calls from the front door. People two streets over probably hear her like they heard 40 Ounce.
Your mama said hurry up. You gotta get ready.
Hey, Pearl.
Mrs. Pearl shields her eyes and looks our way.
Hey, Adele. Haven't seen you in a while. You all right?
Hanging in there, girl. You got that flower bed looking good. I'm coming by later to get some of that Birds of Paradise.
All right.
You not gonna say hey to me, Adele?
40 Ounce asks. When he talks, it jumbled together like one long word.
Hell no, you old fool, Nana says.
The door slams behind her. Daddy, Uncle Carlos, and I crack up. The Cedar Grove King Lords trail us in two cars, and Uncle Carlos drives me and my parents. One of his off-duty buddies occupies the passenger seat. Nana and Aunt Pam trail us, too. All these people, though, and none of them can go in the grand jury room with me. It takes 15 minutes to get to downtown from Garden Heights. There's always construction work going on for some new building. Garden Heights has dope boys on corners, but downtown, people in business suits wait for crossing lights to change. I wonder if they ever hear the gunshots and shit in my neighborhood. We turn onto the street where the courthouse is, and I have one of those weird deja vu moments. I'm 3, and Uncle Carlos drives Mama, 7, and me to the courthouse. Mama cries the entire drive, and I wish Daddy were here because he can always get her to stop crying. 7 and I hold Mama's hands as we walk into a courtroom. Some cops bring Daddy out in an orange jumpsuit. He can't hug us because he's handcuffed. I tell him I like his jumpsuit. Orange is one of my favorite colors. But he looks at me real seriously and says,
"Don't you ever wear this. You hear me?"
All I remember after that is the judge saying something, Mama sobbing, and Daddy telling us he loves us as the cops haul him off. For 3 years, I hated the courthouse because it took Daddy from us. I'm not thrilled to see it now. News vans and trucks are across the street from the courthouse, and police barricades separate them from everybody else. I now know why people call it a media circus. It seriously looks like the circus is setting up in town. 2 traffic lanes separate the courthouse from the media frenzy, but I swear they're a world away. Hundreds of people quietly kneel on the courthouse lawn. Men and women in clerical collars stand at the front of the crowd, their heads bowed. To avoid the clowns and their cameras, Uncle Carlos turns onto the street alongside the courthouse. We go in through the back door. Goon and another King Lord join us. They flank me and don't hesitate to let security check them for weapons. Another security guard leads us through the courthouse. The farther we go, the fewer people we pass in the halls. Ms. Ofra waits behind a door with a brass plate that says Grand Jury Room. She hugs me and asks,
"Ready?"
But once I am, "Yes, ma'am."
"I'll be out here the whole time," she says. "If you need to ask me something, you have that right."
She looks at my entourage.
"I'm sorry, but only Star's parents are allowed to watch in the TV room."
Uncle Carlos and Aunt Pam hug me. Nana pats my shoulder as she shakes her head. Goon and his boy give me quick nods and leave with them. Mama's eyes brim with tears. She pulls me into a tight hug, and it's at that moment of all the moments that I realize I've gotten an inch or two taller than she is.
She plants kisses all over my face and hugs me again. I'm proud of you, baby. You are so brave. That word, I hate it. No, I'm not. Yeah, you are. She pulls back and pushes a strand of hair away from my face. I can't explain the look in her eyes, but it knows me better than I know myself. It wraps me up and warms me from the inside out. Brave doesn't mean you're not scared, Star, she says. It means you go on even though you're scared. And you're doing that. She leans up slightly on her tiptoes and kisses my forehead, as if that makes it true. For me, it kind of does. Daddy wraps his arms around both of us.
You got this, baby girl.
The door to the grand jury room creaks open, and the DA, Ms. Monroe, looks out. We're ready if you are. I walk into the grand jury room alone, but somehow my parents are with me. The room has wood-paneled walls and no windows. About 20 or so men and women occupy a U-shaped table. Some of them are black, some of them aren't. Their eyes follow us as Miss Monroe leads me to a table in front of them with a mic on it. One of Ms. Monroe's colleagues swears me in, and I promise on the Bible to tell the truth. I silently promise it to Khalil, too. Ms. Monroe says from the back of the room, Could you please introduce yourself to the grand jurors? I scoot closer to the mic and clear my throat. My name, my small voice sounds like a 5-year-old's. I sit up straight and try again. My name is Star Carter. I'm 16 years old. The mic is only recording you, not projecting your voice, Ms. Monroe says. As we have our conversation, we need you to speak loud enough for everyone to hear, okay? Yes. My lips brush the mic. Too close. I move back and try again. Yes, ma'am. Good. You came here on your own free will, is that correct? Yes, ma'am. You have an attorney, Ms. April Ofra, correct? She says. Yes, ma'am. You understand you have the right to consult with her, correct? Yes, ma'am. You understand you're not the focus of any criminal charges, correct? Bullshit. Khalil and I have been on trial since he died. Yes, ma'am. Today, we want to hear in your own words what happened to Khalil Harris, okay? I look at the jurors, unable to read their faces and tell if they really want to hear my words. Hopefully they do. Yes, ma'am. Now, since we have that understanding, let's talk about Khalil. You were friends with him, right? I nod, but Ms. Monroe says, Please give a verbal response. I lean toward the mic and say, Yes, ma'am. Shit, I forgot the jurors can't hear me on it, and it's only for recording. It doesn't make any sense that I'm so nervous. How long did you know Khalil? The same story all over again. I become a robot who repeats how I knew Khalil since I was 3. How we grew up together, the kind of person he was. When I finish, Miss Monroe says, Okay, we're going to discuss the night of the shooting in detail. Are you okay with that? The unbrave part of me, which feels like most of me, shouts no. It wants to crawl up in a corner and act as if none of this ever happened. But all those people outside are praying for me. My parents are watching me. Khalil needs me. I straighten up and allow the tiny brave part of me to speak. Yes, ma'am.